Hello, and welcome to the Green Minds podcast,
showcasing the science, stories, and solutions behind climate change.
Welcome to the Green Minds podcast. Once again, we shall be using the wonders of Skype to keep the ball rolling. And today, I'm delighted to present our guest, Philip Ripman, Portfolio Manager for Storebrand Global Solutions, a fund which focuses on companies contributing to the UN Sustainable Development Goals. The fund has recently been highlighted in the annual Climetrics Fund Awards. And notably, of the top 10 rated European climate funds, the fund stands out for delivering the best five-year return. So firstly, welcome, Philip, and thank you for taking the time to chat to us today.
Thank you for having me.
So I guess we start by the question that everyone wants to ask you. What is the secret to the Storebrand Global Solutions, and how have you personally gotten to where you are today?
Right. Well, I don't know if we should do it in that order, if I should go the other way around. But
I don't think
there's any secret. I think we have a couple of things going for us that not everybody does. One of them being the fact that we started quite early. I mean, the company started looking at investing sustainably in 1995. So we've had, you know, a good team in place since then. And there's been a focus on this issue since then. Now, some might say we were actually a little bit too early, a little bit ahead of the market, because at that point, I think it was more about financial institutions saying it was important and the client side perhaps not being there to the extent that they are now. And I think with the Paris Agreement and the events around that time, and obviously then with the global goals that came a little bit after that, we saw a kind of shift where a lot of clients are now kind of asking, how do we basically align our investments with our philosophy or our thinking? How do we make sure that we're not investing in the problem that we're out talking about? Mm-hmm. And that's been a kind of massive change for us as well, where we've seen that kind of develop over time, but it's really accelerated just in the past maybe 3 or 4 years.
Right.
And then in terms of myself, I mean, I never really expected to end up working for a financial institution. So that's a credit to the institution in itself, that it's both kept me interested and given me enough challenges and opportunities along the way to keep it interesting. I started in 2006 as an analyst, looking at various ESG issues and really kind of the intersection between business, politics, and sustainability. And then had the opportunity to develop into, you know, I've worked on the corporate side for the CSR side of things, and I've worked as head of the ESG team and currently as portfolio manager. So it's also credit to the organization really to take a leap of faith, I guess, on somebody with a bit of a different background.
Yeah, no, it's great. And now to go into, you know, a little bit the investment philosophy you have and the focus on SDGs. And I'm sure your experience has really influenced that. Is that something that you would agree with?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, coming from the ESG side of things, it makes the approach a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Obviously, one of my big frustrations over the years was this kind of focus on, you know, just going to where the data is. Right. Because I think if you look at ESG and you look at the data that's been kind of dominating that space for the best part of 10 years, it has focused on what companies actually report. And it makes sense, you know, if you look at company reporting and how that's come into play, if it's via regulation or something else. Mm-hmm. You see that they're focusing on, you know, what kind of systems are put in place to reduce risk in their operations.
Yeah.
A lot of the time that'll be management systems. It'll be stuff like ISO 14001. Mm-hmm. It'll be SA 8000 for social management systems. And all of it will be in that kind of process-led space is what I tend to talk about. And you know, that's fine. And I think it is important information. It's not to disregard it in any way, but it gives you a very kind of strange entry point, which means you're more concerned about the processes and what the actual company delivers. Mm-hmm. And you see that playing its role. If you look at, you know, if it's Norway, you see an oil company winning, you know, Sustainability Company of the Year awards. Mm-hmm. You'll see British American Tobacco winning numerous awards. And it's not that, you know, from a process point of view, they are really good. I mean, oil companies are really good at health and safety, for example, and have pioneered that space in some areas. And I'm guessing that British American Tobacco are pretty good at agriculture after all these years. But the entry point should have been, you know, what does the company actually do? And then the process becomes interesting after the point.
So as you mentioned, your focus is mainly on the output of the companies you invest in. Is that correct?
Yeah. So it's been to try and flip that script a little bit, to try and identify, you know, companies, which companies through their products and services can have a positive effect on the sustainable development goals. Right. It's not to eliminate the fact that companies can also have an effect via how they do their operations, via how they treat their employees, how they think about diversity, for example, and all these issues. Mm-hmm. But I think, again, it's just to point out that I think the entry point has to be, you know, what is, you know, the company's role in society? And that does tend to rear its head through what it delivers. Right. And then focus on process after that.
Could you maybe, to kind of bring that a little bit to light for the listener, tell us a bit about some of the sectors or maybe some of the companies that you invest in?
Absolutely. So we looked at the sustainable development goals as a whole, and what we tried to do was to try and translate them into themes that we could approach in a kind of wholehearted fashion. So what we've done is we've translated them into four themes. Now, that doesn't mean to say that everything is taken on board, but it's four of the strongest trends or themes within the SDGs. Mm-hmm. And we've chosen to work with climate, empowerment, responsible consumption, and sustainable cities. Mm-hmm. And then within each of these four kind of main themes, we work with three sub-themes. And climate's a bit perhaps the obvious one. Climate is solar, wind, and grid. Yeah. I mean, we can talk about other types of renewables as well, but obviously the business case for those is quite obvious. You look at responsible consumption, you're looking at eco-design, you're looking at circular economy. You're looking in much more at the consumer side of things, which some of the others are more kind of system-based, especially if you look at climate and energy, it's more the system behind it, whereas responsible consumption focuses on the consumer. Sustainable cities, again, it's water, waste, and green transport and urban planning, which kind of go hand in hand. So it's really then focusing on those issues. And perhaps one of the issues that I really wanted to bring up as well was this fact that there aren't that many funds focusing on the social side of things. And empowerment as a fourth theme is really the balance to the other three, because even though we've got one called climate, which we could have just renamed renewables, but climate really is a driver for at least three out of those four themes, right? So in terms of sustainable cities, responsible consumption, and renewables as such, climate change is a big driver within those. Not so much within empowerment, which was kind of born through my frustration of where the debate is on gender equality and on inclusion and diversity as a, you know, as a whole. Because in the Nordics, it's very focused on management and board level issues, mm-hmm. which is fine, but it should be complemented with a bit of a kind of global approach, since this is, after all, a global fund. Mm-hmm. And for most of the world, you know, we're not there where we're talking about board level issues yet. So it's really kind of back to basics approach, where how do you create more inclusion and equality? And it really starts simply with access to digital services today, where, for example, women are kept out to a larger extent than men, access to financial services and access to health services. And in particular here, it's a focus on maternal and neonatal health. So kind of zeroed in on that in terms of what lies within the SDG framework. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Really interesting, because as you mentioned, it's often an area which is not brought up as much. So it's really interesting to hear about it. I can also imagine in the current climate, with everything that's going on around the coronavirus pandemic and the challenges that's leading to companies having to take decisions in terms of their employees, is that something that you've seen, that those companies that have a strong track record in terms of their like social side of things are holding up better? Or,
well, again, you know, it's not, in essence, it's not focusing on, again, the kind of processes within companies as such. I mean, we do look at that, but they're there primarily because they're delivering. And for that sake, it's really about infrastructure. So building out access to digital services with an idea and an understanding of where you're offering and to whom you're offering these types of services to. And then, but I will say this for the topic. I mean, regardless of where you sit in terms of whether or not climate change is a good idea for a fund or not, I think having a well-diversified portfolio is important. And I think, if anything, any type of crisis will really show that. And one of the advantages now that we do have is that, you know, these four themes balance each other out a little bit. And with empowerment coming in as strongly as it does within the portfolio, it brings in a different type of company, brings in different industries. It takes in the telecom sector to a larger extent, financials and healthcare. I think the diversification that that offers is quite valuable in these times.
On a more general perspective, how would you expect, you know, these companies that are kind of focused on ESG sectors to kind of hold out in the current climate?
Well, you know, it wasn't that long ago I was on the barricades really kind of advocating for us to kill the word sustainability, because sometimes it means too much or it means too little, just depending on who uses it and how you use it. But with the advent of the Sustainable Development Goals, my hope was that, you know, we could crystallize the idea of, without having to define what sustainability means to you or me, we know what the challenges are that we face, right? 190 plus countries agree that these are the challenges that we face.
Yeah.
So removing it a little bit from the idea of just having to talk about sustainability, if you just think about it from the perspective that these are companies that we believe have solutions to societal issues through what they actually deliver, then I don't think that's a bad space to be. And I don't think the current crisis or any other crisis necessarily changes that to a larger extent. We're not going to need less renewable power as we go forward. Mm-hmm. We're not going to need less access to digital services, for example, as we move forward. So I don't think it changes the long kind of term picture that we're looking at. And these really are long-term investments. So again, yeah, I don't think it changes that narrative really at all. It might a little bit on the short term, obviously, with the oil price coming down to the extent that it has.
Yeah.
You put into question, you know, the competitiveness of renewables in that scenario. And also, for example, recycling as a topic, which we do have exposure to. It would be cheaper with virgin petrochemicals now than it was previously. So is the incentive there to do recycling to a larger mm-hmm. extent? So there will be all of that in the short term, but I do think the long term narrative stays true, which is if you can deliver, you know, solutions to what society needs, I think that's a good place to be.
Yeah, no, I agree. I actually think that's a very interesting way of looking at it, because at the end of the day, if all these countries have come to agreement on a certain set of goals, to be working with companies who are focusing on those goals, I think is, as you say, quite a safe bet towards the future. I was also thinking, whilst we're on the current climate and everything that's going on, is there anything that you've seen, experienced in these last few weeks of work that you can see affecting how the working world may evolve in the coming years?
Well, I think the obvious thing to answer here is really the kind of focus on the digital side of things. I think a lot of companies have been forced into a situation where a lot of people are working from home or from different locations. Obviously, various countries and companies have had different types of responses to the current crisis, but I think it's an obvious case that they might actually accelerate that development, where we could, you know, potentially see a future where a lot of us can work from different locations. So I think that's the obvious case. But I really think that's something that will hit across the board. It's not just the obvious in terms of sitting and doing video conferencing. It might be, you know, remote health access. It'd be remote democratic functions as well. And I think this, it just brings the digital side into the forefront in a way that, you know, really becomes accelerated and really potentially might even have, let's say, a positive effect in terms of climate as well. If that reduces our needs to travel to the extent that we have previously, if it reduces our need to get into a car and drive from A to B, but also in terms of, you know, if we can actually, you know, if we feel that it is a worthy substitute to what we've been doing in terms of meeting face to face, then yeah, I mean, the potential really is limitless in terms of having a potential positive effect on climate change as a topic as well.
I wanted to ask actually just to finish on that theme. For people who are interested in ESG and the Sustainable Development Goals, do you have any recommended reading or things that they should be doing with this extra time that we all have at home these days?
I wish I could pull out one particular thing. I mean, I just, you know, I tend to consume quite a lot. Right. So really just anything that crosses my desk. But again, you know, I think going back to my introduction as well, don't get blinded by the data, I think, is one of the important aspects of when you read information and you want to link it into asset management, you want to link it into to company analysis. Have an eye to combine that with, well, wait a minute, what does the company actually, you know, where does it generate its income? Where does it generate its revenue? What is it selling? What kind of service is it offering? And what is the need for that type of service or product in any given scenario that you might be looking at? And I think that's a kind of filter that whatever crosses your desk or whatever crosses your sphere in terms of ESG and sustainability, have that in mind when you read it. And unless it takes that into account, I'm nearly tempted to put it in a pile that's, let's say, less prioritized than something else.
Right. Just out of interest, how does that work in terms of investing in sectors which are maybe trying to transition?
For this fund, I won't consider it just given the profile of the fund and the strategy that we've chosen. But I absolutely think it's not just an interesting issue, it's a completely vital issue as well. I mean, we do need to see industries and different types of companies transition.
Yeah.
It's not about just, you know, focusing and forging ahead with what we've got. But if it is changing the energy system or changing the way that we produce goods, I mean, that needs to happen alongside all of this. And it is an extremely exciting area. I think in terms of oil and gas, you know, you're seeing a lot of the companies starting to talk about, you know, being energy companies, not oil and gas companies, you know, putting aside CapEx for use on renewable technologies.
Mm-hmm.
But I think yet to date, there's really only one oil and gas company that comes to mind. Which is a Danish oil and gas company now, Ørsted, that has really only transitioned. I don't think there's been any others.
Right. Do you think that the way we evaluate ESG in the coming years is going to be more disclosure-led, or there will be an increase in, as you mentioned, looking at the kind of philosophy of the company or the output of what they're producing?
Right. Well, you know, obviously with, you know, with both TCFD playing a central and more central role, I think, with the EU Sustainable Finance Programme and the taxonomy attached to that, I mean, obviously there will be much more disclosure at a corporate level.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are bigger data providers now that will incorporate that and try to, I guess, translate and collect all that data and provide it to asset managers. But I think there is always a space to be able to utilize that data in the best possible way. Because I do think that, you know, people do get blinded by data. And I think greenhouse gas emission data is probably one of the best areas to demonstrate that in. You know, if I look at my own portfolio and I've done analysis in terms of greenhouse gas intensity or carbon emission intensity, you know where the most intensive companies come from. But it's still restricted by data that's only scope 1 and scope 2. It doesn't take scope 3 into account.
Yeah.
So one of the biggest holding that I have in terms of producing the most emissions is probably Owens Corning, which provides insulation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, insulation, if you were to take it into account, and if you read from what they're saying, you know, within 4 to 6 weeks of their product being in use, they would have actually saved more energy than they would have put into the production of insulation.
Yeah.
So I think being able to, you know, look at the data that corporates are reporting, put it into a system, but also being able to disregard data when you know that it's wrong or where it's the result of a system that's imperfect, I think that will always have a value. So I think there'll be much more disclosed data from a corporate level, which means there'll be much larger data flow into asset managers. But I really think it'll also come down to the ability of asset managers to really utilize that data in the best possible function.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, is kind of learning the relevance of the data and being able to understand it for what it truly is. It's something we've looked at quite a bit on my current master's. And as you mentioned, not getting blinded by just this is the greenhouse gas footprint of the production without then considering what the product is actually helping to do afterwards. Yeah. Yeah. Great. Okay. And so the question that I always finish my episodes with is, imagine we're in 2049. So in the UK, the target is to be net zero by 2050. Like, how do you foresee the world looking? You know, it could be in an ESG investing space or as a wider look. What do you hope the world will look like?
Well, in a weird sense, and this harks back to really, you know, when I started working with this, you know, I was with an understanding that really, I was working to kind of eliminate my own position to some extent.
Right.
And that's not necessarily a portfolio manager type of idea, but it's more in terms of, you know, I really wish that the kind of ESG side of things, sustainability side of things, you know, it's when, as soon as we put that tag onto it, it does become something different. And I don't necessarily think that it should be. I mean, it grants us a different way of looking at companies. It grants us more information to get a better picture of where companies are headed, hopefully, when it's done correctly, because it's not, neither is it a kind of golden egg idea that as soon as you apply sustainability, you're guaranteed any kind of better outcome. It's how you use it that becomes important. Yeah. But really, it's about that materiality of the data as well, and the materiality of what you're looking at. And, you know, I think one of the terms I hate the most is when they call it non-financial data.
Right.
Because at the moment, you know, as soon as it does become non-financial, then it does become uninteresting. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that that materiality, when applied to it, means that there is a lot of relevant data within the ESG sphere that I think is relevant to how that we look at companies. But hopefully, you know, there should be an integration taking place, and which means that the kind of lines between what is sustainable data and what isn't should be washed out over time. And it should really just become an issue of, okay, well, is this relevant to the way that we look at companies, which I do think it will become.
But, so it would be like a mainstreaming of ESG into conventional financial decision making.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think that would benefit everybody. It would mean it would become valued. It would mean that's a signal from the asset management industry and the asset owners as well to say that this is something that we take seriously, and this means that we will invest more in companies that take these things seriously, mm-hmm. And that operate accordingly. So I do think that would be a benefit to everybody, and it would create a more healthy financial market. But, you know, if it's a pipe dream or not, I don't know. But I do think that hopefully once that integration takes place, there won't be a need for specifically an ESG analyst as such, or a sustainability analyst. That will just become regular part of the way that we look at companies, yeah, and asset management as a whole.
That's it'll be interesting to see how things evolve over the coming years.
Sure, I agree.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your time, Philip. Thank you for joining us.
No worries at all. Thank you for having me. We'll be right back.